You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
More than 20 state legislatures are currently considering bills that would prohibit judges from following foreign law. And by foreign, they mostly mean Sharia. Sharia has become the modern boogeyman for many Americans, as pernicious and vaguely menacing in its overtones as communist was in the 1950s. Lawmakers in Kansas reported this week their inboxes have been filling up with thousands of emails directly calling for a ban on Sharia law in Kansas. The problem is, most Americans really have no idea what Sharia law is. It's one of the many problems that Sadaqat Qadri set out to address in his new book. It's called Heaven on Earth, A History of Sharia Law and Its Many Interpretations. And he joins us now. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me here.
I understand that your inspiration to write this book came after September 11th and specifically the London bombings in 2005. You were in London at the time. And I wonder if you were angry. It sounds like you were angry that terrorists tried to justify their actions under Sharia law. And you went to research whether that was possible or not.
Sure. I was absolutely furious. I mean, I was here in New York on 9/11, and I was also in London on 7/7, like you said. And the killers on both those occasions did justify their actions under Islamic law. But then on the other hand, there were also people who were arguing against them, who were saying who effectively agreed with them. They said, well, actually, Islam is a religion of violence. Islamic law does justify these things. And I just thought to myself, well, you know, what's the answer here? I'm a Muslim myself, and I'm a lawyer, but I didn't know the answer. I asked around. I asked my family, I asked my friends, and no one seemed to know the answer. And I thought, well, you know, there's got to be some basic answers here. Who wrote this Sharia? What are its rules? What does it say about things like this? And the more I tried to find out, the more I realized that it was going to be a tricky task. So I eventually got myself a contract to write a book about it.
Well, and you're not just a lawyer, you're a Harvard-educated lawyer. And you, in Harvard fashion, went back into deep research. You went all the way to the beginnings with Muhammad. And what was interesting to me in your portrait of Muhammad was you showed him a very agile mind that was balancing dual roles as both a prophet and a king, and how his laws kind of conformed to try and encompass both of those things.
Sure, sure. I mean, he was basically handing down a religion in the back in the 7th century. And like you say, he had these dual duties. I mean, as far as Muslims are concerned, obviously the revelations that he was revealing are coming directly from God. But he also had very practical duties that he had to manage as the Muslim community expanded. And then after his death, those dual duties just multiplied because the Islamic world just expanded hugely. I mean, within 70 years, it was stretching from southern Spain all the way over to India. And so the need for new laws just became huge, because actually, even though a lot of people think the Sharia comes just from the Quran, that's not true at all. There's actually a very limited number of rules in the Quran. I was very surprised to when I read the Holy Book specifically with a view to finding out what its commands were. There's only four crimes in the entire book.
What surprises me, especially since Sharia law is such a very relevant topic of conversation, not just here in the United States, where people seem to be largely afraid of it, but especially in emerging democracies like Tunisia and Egypt, where they're trying to maybe reflect Sharia law in democratic constitutions. Mm. What's amazing to me is that this was a set of rules that people were very resistant to writing down, to encapsulating in a code.
Sure.
Why?
Sure. Well, back in the 7th century, this is actually common to a lot of pre-modern civilizations, and it's not just the Arabs. But basically, there was an idea that writing itself was sacred. The Quran was an exception. The Quran was the book of God, as far as people were concerned. That was written down. But other laws were effectively blasphemous. You didn't write down laws. That's what God did. For human beings to do that was a very, very dangerous thing as far as Muslims were concerned. And yet nowadays what we see is that all over the place the hardliners are trying to enact statutes. And you know what I do in my book, I'm not an apologist for Islamic repression at all. You know, I consider myself a Muslim, but like many, many Muslims around the Muslim world, I'm completely clear-eyed about the injustices that are often committed in Islam's name. And the first half of the book, like you say, is historical. The second half of the book involves me traveling around the world and around the Muslim world. And I go to these countries where some terribly repressive acts are being carried out. Pakistan, Iran, Those are the two. Those are the two countries where I spend most time, and where there's greatest injustice. But what I try to show is that the Sharia actually has, and Islamic law has a very, very varied history, and the traditions that are being applied now are actually just a very small focus of that huge history, which extends from things like diet and dress to sexuality to codes of behavior at mealtimes, but it's punishment which is being focused on specifically in certain of those states, and that I think is just a travesty of history.
Did you find the ways in which Sharia law can work in cooperation with a democratic constitution?
Oh, sure. I mean, Sharia itself simply means path. It's the English equivalent.
Path to water?
Path to water, that's right. And in a desert culture, that would be a very important path, obviously. The closest English equivalent, I think, is straight and narrow. There's also a precise Jewish equivalent, the halacha, the path that should be walked. And so it's a spiritual term. It's not a blueprint for anything. It's certainly, least of all, a blueprint for overthrowing the United States Constitution, which is what a few of these legislators that you mentioned seem to think that it is. It's because it is this spiritual term. It certainly is compatible with many, many legal systems, including, I believe, systems which recognize and support human rights. That isn't to say that human rights are protected in several of these Muslim states, because I think that some of these Muslim it's objectively true, according to the several international standards, that these states do fall short of human rights standards in many, many ways. But there are other countries like Malaysia, most Muslim countries which pay heed to the Sharia but don't violate human rights.
But there will probably never be an accepted, say, 10 commandments of Sharia law, it sounds like.
No, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's for Muslims themselves to work out what it is.
And you can actually, it's a fascinating book, also funny. You got some jokes in there, Sadaqat, which was...
That was part of the purpose. Thanks very much.
Sadaqat Qadri, author of Heaven on Earth, A History of Sharia Law and Its Many Interpretations, and a rollicking good read. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.